Welcome to Ear Biscuits. I'm Link.
And I'm Rhett. This week at the Round Table of Dim Lighting, we're going to be exploring the question, did our careers just peak?
We are fresh off of a tour, a little mini tour. We went to St. Louis, Columbus, Washington, D.C., and Nashville. And in Nashville, the venue was very special because it was the mother church of country music, the Ryman Auditorium. I mean, you just mentioned to me, and we translated it into the question of this episode. You said that the thought did cross your mind. Is this the peak of our career?
I think
we want to talk to you about the whole tour. I'm certain we will reflect on that specifically.
P-E-E-K, peak.
Not did our careers just like lean over and look around a corner at us.
No, yes, that would be P-E-E-K.
Oh, that is what you meant.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about P-E-A-K?
Yes.
Or are you talking about P-I-Q-U-E, peak?
Not that. What do you mean by P-E-E-K? You're being humorous.
I'm just doing some spelling humor.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite things to do on a podcast. Because spelling humor goes really well, you know, in the audio. I mean, I always look for a chance to spell peak, P-I-Q-U-E.
Three different ways, including that way. Okay.
If your interest is peaked, just a little grammar lesson, it's P-I-Q-U-E-D. It's not P-E-A-K-E-D. Like, it was the peak of your interest.
And if I peek around a corner and that piques your interest, then that may be a peak moment for you.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And you know what? Spelling's important.
So we kind of want to go through, spelling's important.
It is.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Do you watch your kids?
Spell? Like, no, it sounds quite boring.
No, like, have you ever like, gone up
hey kid,
behind
you mind
your
if I
kid
look over your shoulder and watch your spell
while they like write a paper?
I've read their papers. Yeah,
you've never been with them when they were in the process of writing a paper. Now listen, I can relate to this because I become incredibly dependent on spell check.
Yeah,
but kids these days, man, like
they got it bad.
They stumble over like the, and it's auto corrected for them.
How else would you spell the?
T-H-E-E.
That's also correct.
E-A. T-H-I-Q-U-E.
Your kids don't know how to spell V?
That's thick.
Man. So we're gonna step through a bunch of that. But one of the things that we know, you know, you don't have a lot of time in each town. We did those four dates over the course of 5 days.
Yeah.
So it's pretty aggressive. But you do find these little pockets of time to experience a little sliver of the locale.
Right.
And one of the things that we've noticed that was across all of these cities, I think it's something that's sweeping the nation.
Sweeping.
Maybe the world. Of course, I didn't see them in London. Or did I? No, I don't think I did.
I don't think you did because there's a bigger bike culture in London
already. I'm talking about app-accessed scooters.
I mean, we are in the peak, I believe. scootering around American cities.
And
there's quite a competition going right now. I mean, in a couple of the cities, we saw like four or five different companies. You got Lime, you got Bird, you got Lyft getting into it, you got Uber getting into it.
Yeah.
Then there was like two other ones, I can't even remember the names.
Like Jump, Flip, Skip, and
Hop. Something like that.
Roller Buddies.
Roller Buddies just doesn't fit on a scooter.
Two wheels, one cup, I think was one of them.
I think it's two wheels, 1 foot.
That's it. That was it. That's ours.
Two wheels, no helmet. That's what they call me. Because incidentally, that's another thing. You know, first of all, you got to download the apps for each one of these services. And then like the first time you download the app, you sign.
you agree to
you
the
agree
terms.
You agree to a lot of things. And one of the terms is that of course you will wear a helmet, but
right.
Literally no one on any scooter at any time that we saw had a helmet on.
Well, I mean, so when we were in St. Louis, I mean, we went to this barbecue place and then we went to the Gateway Arch, which I believe is 630 feet tall.
Wow, that's a...
I looked that up, and then I don't remember numbers, so I'm probably wrong. But I think I'm right,
because
I
looked it up. It feels
right. I looked it up very recently. Well, we were gonna go up there, but we didn't have time to book a tour. You can take a friggin' sideways or arch path elevator to the top of this thing, but we couldn't do that. So we just walked around the bottom of it, and we're walking around down there, and it's, you got all these pavers, and it's like undulating terrain, just little hills, but there are some steps, and there are some steps that then become undulating terrain and ramps. And as we're walking, it was me, Rhett, and Britton, and I see these two girls, they were probably like 15, and they were careening in front of us on two of these scooters. And the girl in front zips by us, and then she turns around and she yells, "Don't go on the stairs!" And that drew my eye to her. So I didn't actually see what happened, but you did.
Well, the way that the train was set up, there was a blind spot, essentially. So it just, from your perspective, it just, you were gonna continue on straight ground, but really there was like a two or three step drop.
Of concrete.
Yeah, and the steps were such that the further left you were, the more steps there were to go down. And she just happened to choose a line that was like two or three steps. Like 2 or 3 feet to the left, and it would have been 5 or 6 steps. Like it was, anyway.
Did she take flight?
Well, like you said, her friend said at the last minute, "Don't go off there," or whatever. And that was exactly the wrong thing to say, because she basically dismounted in the air, and the scooter landed really, really hard. She actually landed on her feet. It could have been really, really ugly.
And she landed on her feet and was like immediately like plop, 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 like running in a very awkward fashion. But she could have hit her head on the concrete and died, man.
We could have witnessed the death.
Well, I could have witnessed her friend witnessing the death, because I was looking at the wrong girl.
Well, and that's the main thing that I'm thinking the whole time I'm on there. They go like 20 miles per hour, and eat faster than that if you're going downhill. And the wheels are relatively small. You know, there's not necessarily, you're supposed to be riding in bike lanes when possible, but most American cities aren't bike friendly. So
right.
There's very few bike lanes.
A lot of
people don't know
sidewalks.
Where to go. They go on the sidewalks. When they're in the street, there might be potholes. People don't have good balance. People aren't wearing helmets. And so there's this crazy thing that's happening where all these companies are competing against each other to try to win this market.
Yeah.
But at the same time, people are getting hurt.
Well, when we were in Austin, there was this makeup woman, and we happened to start talking to her about the scooters because we saw them around Austin. And she said, "Yeah, my husband was on one and he went off a curb and fell over and hurt his leg, and really badly. Like he was in a lot of pain." And the paramedics show up, and after a while they're like, "You're okay, just go home." And he went home that night and he woke up in excruciating pain. And she said that he like was in so much pain that he started to go into shock. And so she took him to the emergency room, and he had broken his femur on a freaking scooter, guys.
Yeah.
And the helmet doesn't protect the femur, last time I checked.
Well, if you get a femur helmet.
That's what we need. So two wheels, 1 foot is gonna, we're gonna figure out a way to like attach the helmet to the scooter and also have like femur pads.
Right.
I mean, you can really get hurt, because you think you can ride a scooter, but you don't realize how fast these things can go. And also, you're tempted to just steer like left, right, inky, inky, inky. But you really should steer by leaning.
You need to be using your body weight.
You gotta be using your body weight, but that's not immediately intuitive. And if you start doing that, then you're doing the shaky, shaky, shaky thing. And then you're you're careening out of control.
And locals hate these things. I mean, so when
they have to.
When we were in Nashville, by that point, Britton's friends had showed up. Jenna was with us at the time, so it was like, there was like 6 of us in a little pod going down
the street.
Basically, the main drag in Nashville. And as we continued going down, we started realizing like, this has almost become a highway. Like people are like turning off of this to get on the interstate. There's only a few stoplights. There's no bike lane. We're right up again, like we're going across a bridge and like the six of us in a line are kind of taking up the lane. And people are just laying on their horns. The locals hate us and they should.
And, but we were doing the right thing because you're not supposed to be on the sidewalk. You're supposed to be like a bike. But they were just laying on the horn. I guess it was because some of us were like waggling.
It goes beyond that though, because I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to say, don't be here. Like go on a less busy street. Wear a freaking helmet. You know, and we were talking to-
Go back to whatever town you're from.
Talking to Britain friends and apparently in Raleigh, North Carolina, they've gotten rid of all of them.
Oh, really?
They've just gotten rid of all the scooters is what we were told. I haven't been there to confirm this because they couldn't figure out how to regulate them. And then the companies were like, well, screw it. We're not gonna be a part of this. See, I just don't know where this is gonna land because people are getting hurt and they're gonna continue to get hurt. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, so when we were in Columbus, I mean, I looked out my hotel window and I saw a couple of people, like we were downtown by the river and like there's like nice river walks on either side of it. And I saw some people with scooters. I was like, bingo, we're gonna do it. Cause we didn't do it in St. Louis. I just saw a girl almost eat it. And then the next morning, here I am still thinking it's a great idea. And you know what it was?
Oh, it's so much fun.
It was fun. I mean, when you're not just going on the surface streets, like in a downtown area with a lot of traffic, but you're on like a dedicated path and a relatively fresh one that doesn't have like a bunch of treachery to it. That was fun, man. The weather was great. It was beautiful. That was a highlight of the trip was scooting around, man.
Being off of the road, I would say that being on a not busy road or being on like a park path is peak scooter terrain.
But you know what? I think I'm gonna start traveling with a helmet. Why are you laughing? I gotta get a little helmet, man. You laugh now, but you're not gonna laugh when you don't remember how to laugh because you hit your head.
There's something about being on a scooter though that makes me feel, because my feet are so close to the ground already, I feel like I can just like jump out of any situation, any danger, and just immediately jump and be standing up. Whereas like a motorcycle, you're going a lot faster.
Yeah.
You know.
Your feet are really close to the ground on a motorcycle too.
But you can't just walk off of a motorcycle.
If you're riding side saddle, you can.
Yeah, I don't ride my motorcycle side saddle like anymore.
How do you ride your horse? Side saddle?
Backwards. I don't want anybody sneaking up on me.
I ride my horses backwards. So I don't know what the future of scootering is going to be, but they can't tether the helmets to the thing because then that's a hazard. You got
what, lice?
Oh, lice too.
Yeah, it's a lice hazard. Is that what you mean by
no,
that?
No, I mean like if there's a string, a tether, so that people won't walk away with the helmets. I think you need a helmet sharing app.
Same company, different company.
Different company.
We should do the helmet sharing.
So you're gonna have to like walk to the helmet and then the problem would people be scootering to the helmet.
You gotta sign in. No, you know, it's gotta be the same company and you can't, it's like one of those things that after you get a few DUIs, you can't start a car without breathing into it. This is like, you have to like step on, you have to like hit
you gotta bonk head, your
you
head.
You gotta headbutt the scooter with the helmet in so order to get it going.
Or just be willing to headbutt the scooter really hard without a helmet to make it seem like.
I think if they had a helmet that was like a zip tie, kind of, not zip tie, but like a zip line, like it comes out from the handlebars and then you're kind of like loosely tethered to the thing.
It's kind of like.
That sounds like it might be more dangerous.
Kind of like it's got a, like, it got a narrow roof on it. It's like, have you ever seen those bikes that would have like a shell on them?
Yeah.
Like an aerodynamic shell, like have one of those come off the handlebar, zoop, goes over your whole head.
Then it's just a little car. That's no fun. You don't feel the breeze anymore. I want to feel the breeze. That's half of it.
Okay.
Anyway, y'all got to figure that out. And I don't know who's going to win this, but
yeah.
I don't know if I would invest in my gut is that this is not sustainable, but if it ends up being sustainable.
I think it is.
My gut says that now that Lyft and apparently Uber is in this game, I feel like they're gonna win.
Because you already got that app.
Yeah, because the main barrier is like, I gotta download something. Man, I don't have good service here.
But what? You get
now
so excited.
I gotta take pictures of my license. But I don't travel with my license.
I've never been so willing to download an app as when I was about to get on a scooter. I will say that. Like, when I'm about to get on a scooter, I'll download any app. I mean, it could be like a credit card number sharing app. Like, hackme.com app. I would download that. That's how excited I was and dead set on getting on that scooter.
No, it's an interesting app.
I would agree to anything. I mean, I basically signed my life away. Yeah, I'm wearing a helmet. Wink, wink, wink. You know?
Yeah, I'm hard-headed.
And then people are taking them home and charging them up and making a little extra scratch, you know?
Yeah.
It's good for everybody. And they're not gas powered. Well, technically it's good for the
maybe it's not too late. Maybe we
the
can
environs.
Get, maybe we can get in on this. Mythical scooters, you know what? We make ours three wheeled. Safer. Shaped like a pyramid. It's double wheeled in the back.
No, two wheels in the front like when a kid's learning how to ride a scooter. Yeah.
Like a spider?
Yeah, and we market it to children. That's what we do.
Okay, so a couple of interesting things about this tour. Now, as we've stated repeatedly, but it cannot be overstated, apparently, because even some of the VIPs who showed up to meet and greet us after a few of the shows, multiple people would say something along these lines. Man, I didn't know you guys played music. I mean, like, I thought this was gonna be like 2 hours of Will It Burrito.
Somebody said that specifically, yeah.
And listen,
like, that would be a big burrito.
Now, I do understand.
We could do it, and we would do it, and we might do it.
Yeah, you've given us a great idea, but that's like—
We didn't just do it.
Not this year. I think that it's a little, we have a little bit of a branding problem, right? Because the thing that we're known for the most is Good Mythical Morning. And let's be honest, if you were to watch just a little highlight reel of what we do on the show, you might not come to the conclusion that these two idiots had any other talents other than
we also
not
got
being able to eat things.
Yeah, I think someone said, I didn't know you guys were talented. these are like fans paying to meet us. I mean, these are like true mythical beasts. I didn't know, you know, but things come out sideways when you're meeting somebody that you've watched a lot on the internet. So I just find humor in it, but I know they didn't mean anything by it.
Well,
but I'm like,
and on top of that, another thing I'll say is that let's say that you're a fan of GMM and you've been watching that, and then what you have seen of our other work is, say, our really popular rap battles or other music videos that we made on YouTube. Again, anybody can make a music video. Anybody can sing along with the track. Anybody can have their voice auto-tuned. Mm. So I think a lot of people are just like, oh, well, of course, yeah, you've done music videos, but to sit down and for almost 2 hours for us to do live instrument-based music is something that a lot of people just aren't expecting. But again, as we explain at every show, one of the things that's really cool about it is that it's sort of a returning to the roots of what we did before. This whole before YouTube started, our comedy was primarily just funny songs that we performed live for people. And then we turned some of those into music videos, and that was sort of the beginning of our comedy career. So this is kind of going back to what started it all. And anyway.
It's really fun to do. I'm very glad that this is what we decided to do when we now tour. And by the way, we are continuing to tour, so if you want to come see us, RhettLinkLive.com. Can I plug the dates? I should.
Plug the
I
dates, man. Plug it.
So the end of June, Las Vegas on June 21st, Salt Lake City, 22nd, Denver, the 23rd, Milwaukee, the 25th, Indianapolis, the 26th, Detroit, the 27th, Omaha, the 29th, Minneapolis, the 30th. RhettAndLinkLive.com. Get your tickets. I just had such a good time because, you know, I really enjoy singing the songs that we've written over the years, and but it also does capture a lot, and I think of what people like about Good Mythical Morning, and that's the fact that we can kind of, you know, it's not scripted. We're just kind of in between songs. We're just kind of cutting up and seeing what happens. And on any given night, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, at the beginning, the songs were, we were a little more rusty than, by the time we got to Nashville, we kind of had the songs down and we weren't going to forget lyrics and stuff like that. But like on the first night, one of the new songs, when you moved over to the piano, like you started playing it, then you never started singing. And I'm like, he doesn't remember the lyrics. And all of a sudden you're like, I can't remember the words. And
right.
And that was the most fun part of the night because it's like
for you.
It was, I mean,
real fun for you.
When something goes wrong, it's like, okay, everybody in the whole place knows this was not planned, so now what are we gonna do? And so that's what's fun, is that when you don't have to wig out, you can just say, you can just have fun with it. And that was fun. I had fun messing with you, and not, I knew the lyrics, so I chose not to tell you and kind of make you squirm, but.
I sat there and played the piano for what felt like 5 minutes.
It was funny, man.
Played the intro.
People loved it.
Oh, I know people loved it. I'm just saying
because it's honest.
I was like, I really don't know how to access what the first words of this song are. But like you said, by the time we got to Nashville, we had the songs figured out. I think the thing is that I don't mind, and actually I look forward to, you know, what's gonna happen in between the songs and what stories are we gonna tell, and it's very loose, and where is it gonna go, or what kind of bit are we gonna just come up with in the moment. But I don't want all the bits to come from screwing the songs up.
Well, they didn't.
And they didn't. Because I have a lot more fun. The more I know the song,
it frees you up to then.
And then I can actually have good, have fun in the midst of it, because you know it's like it's just one of those. It's a little bit of a blessing and a curse that we get to do so many things, but because we do so many things, it isn't like we sit around and like rehearse,
right,
our music all the time.
We don't rehearse enough. But then we turn the mess ups into, okay, we can make fun of that happening, and we can kind of milk it for comedy. But
and maybe we'll
it's also a very safe space.
Maybe we'll have, I mean, my goal is for us to have at least another new song that no one has heard at all by the time we
in June.
Go out on the summer tour.
But it's also great, I'm very grateful that it's such a safe space for us to perform, because everybody is, even if they didn't know what to expect, they're a dedicated mythical beast, and they're there with someone who's already oriented to what's going on. So it's not like we have to win the crowd over. We just have to have fun. And I think it was a lot of fun. And I can imagine how if touring is your first thing and you're trying to win over a crowd and trying to build an audience that way, it's like, that would be difficult. So it's nice that we don't have to do that.
Well, but you know, speaking of winning over a crowd who's not familiar with you, I mean, one of the things that made this tour unique was Britain opening up for us.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, we've talked about Britain a lot. Britain Buchanan, Link's cousin, who was on The Voice and is living with Link and Christy now. And we honestly didn't know how that was gonna go, because his songs are not, it's not comedy.
Right.
He's just like a legitimately great songwriter and musician and singer. And so we were like, well, we enjoy this. We think you'll enjoy it too. And you know that there's the family connection, but we would kind of go out and watch, not go out into the crowd, but kind of go side stage and watch Britain perform. And it's like, thank you to all the mythical beasts who received him so warmly. But I'll say that you weren't doing it out of any sort of
obligation
or pity. I think everyone was legitimate. For everything that I've seen on the internet, everybody was legitimately impressed, because he's good.
Yeah, and he did a good job winning people over with like the stuff that he would say in between his songs too. So
yeah, we won't spoil any surprises. I think we're going to talk a little bit more about what Britain does on tour on LTAT, but we won't get into that too much here. But that we also traveled with him.
Yeah,
so he was with us the entire time.
Speaking of traveling, so we have like the tour bus situation, and then on the tour bus, you got the front part, and then you go back to the middle part, and there's these, like, I call them coffins. You sleep in a coffin. They're like two high. On some buses, they're three high.
Well, these were two high. On this thing. I mean, you can imagine the first time we did this, there were three high. So
you can't sit up in it.
And I can't lay all the way down. They don't make them 6 foot seven. These things are probably
6'2", 6'3".
I could stretch
out.
I think they might
at 6 foot.
I think they might be just below my height. I think it might be like 6.5 feet plus the siding or whatever. So like 6'5". So
how do you sleep in there?
Well, not well.
Because you couldn't.
To begin with, I'll say, for a couple of reasons. I mean, not being able to stretch out, I sleep on my side, so I'm not at full height. You know, I sleep like a baby in the womb. And
like with your knees under your chin?
I mean, if I can get them there, yeah. It's completely balled up, ready for tornadoes and anything.
Like in a tuck position.
No, I sleep on my side, so I'm a little bit curled up. But even like in my bed, if I'm sleeping on my side, there's moments during the night where I'll kind of wake up and I'll just like, for a moment, just sort of stretch out completely.
Just unfurl the flag,
just
so to speak.
Just to like remember my height, length. You know? And then turn to the other side. So you can't do that. And also, I'm such a light sleeper that pothole, I wake up. Fast turn, I wake up.
Oh yeah?
That's not fun. But I did get better. I did get better on the second night.
I like sleeping in a confined space. I mean, I don't know, something about it, I felt like a cozy little child.
If it was a little bit longer and we weren't moving, it would be great. Once we arrived,
that's a morbid thought.
Once we arrive to the destination, and then they kind of let you wake up on your own whenever you happen to wake up, and the bus is, I'll sleep indefinitely in that scenario.
Well, but you didn't. Well, I mean, that first morning there, I woke up and I realized we're not moving. And you're like, your coffin has a curtain. So it's like pretty dark in there, even if it's bright outside, which it turns out it was, because I looked out my curtain. And then I got a text from Jenna and she was like, instructions are on the counter when you want to come into the hotel, I assume where everybody else already was, because I didn't hear anything. And then, so I got out, no one was on the bus. And then I look and Britain's curtain's closed. And I'm like, I didn't open the curtain because I didn't know what position or state he might be in terms of clothing. So I just poked the curtain and I did hit something. So I'm like, oh, he is in there. And I was like, time to get up. It was 11:30. Britt and I were the only two people on the bus. And then we oriented ourselves and we go to exit the bus. And Britt like goes down the steps and he's like, turns the doorknob. It doesn't respond. And then he's like shaking on the, I was like really pulling on the lever. And I'm like, well, hold on, don't break the door. And he's like, we're locked in, man. And I'm like, what? No, we're not, just, you know, and we start, and you look at the front of this bus, which we don't know anything about, and there's buttons everywhere. It's like the cockpit of an airplane. There's buttons everywhere. And so we start pushing all of them. And we push the ones that look like they have something to do with a door.
Right.
And I heard something click around the door, but then it still wouldn't open, like here, and then I'm over there, like putting all my weight onto it. We're locked on the bus for a day, the whole day. No, we eventually got off, but that was our first bus experience. I like sleeping on the bus, but I don't like being confined and not being able to exit the bus. That's a little disconcerting.
Well, that raises an interesting question. Are there other exits? Is there an exit in the back? Because there should be exits. Because what if there was
a fire? You think about this
now? What if there's a fire on the bus? There should be multiple exits on the bus.
I guess we need an orientation.
Like, obviously there's like a exit in the back of a school bus. But it's a room in the back of this thing.
There's exits on the roof of a school bus, and every window is an exit. Like if a school bus like lays on its side or something, you can go out the top of a school bus.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, or the window.
You can get out of a school bus lots of different ways.
Which way.
And you don't need a button.
Need no button.
Maybe we should be traveling in a school bus, I'm just saying.
You do have me thinking that now I need to start checking for exits.
I'm a little worried.
That's why Christy should have come with me. I know that's the first thing she looks for, is the exit. out of everything. I mean, not our relationship. We're doing great.
Hmm, interesting.
We played at Columbus that night once I got out of the bus and got off the scooter. That was fun. That was a great show. I mean, I in general, I'll just shout out thanks to all the crowds everywhere, super supportive. And then when we do the meet and greet afterward, it's always special because you kind of get to hear just a little bit from fans in terms of how they watch the show, what watching us means to them. And it always blows me away how the nature of our show being daily, and I guess our friendship. And I mean, there's a lot of intangibles that, like, being on the inside, it's just hard to get perspective on how people enjoy the show or what it means to them and helps them get through hard times and they can count on it and stuff like that. So it's really helpful to get out there and meet the people, you know, to press the flesh. It really puts things in perspective.
Well, but everything except that last part, I understand. I mean, yes.
Press the flesh is not the right word. You can't, that was a political term, right? That you can't use anymore.
That was first, handshakes. And we don't. Know, if you want to hug, we hug, whatever. We let you initiate whatever you want to do. But yeah, I mean, I think that.
So flesh is pressed, but I mean, it's upon their initiation.
Yeah, I just don't like to use flesh and pressed in the context of the meet and greet.
That's true.
I just kind of would like to abandon that terminology.
Yeah, let's abandon it. Let's lock it in the bus.
But I, you know, I did see some people on Twitter talking before this run, and they were saying, I don't know. I'm nervous. I don't know what to say. And I think people will have a tendency to feel like they have to have some sort of something prepared, or as if they're like auditioning to be the perfect mythical beast in that moment. And that's not what it's about at all. I mean, you know, whatever you want to do. I mean, we have one girl who sang for us.
Got another guy who performed a rap for us.
You know, and those are awesome.
It's hilarious.
If you want to do that, do that.
I mean, it was supposed to be funny. And
we don't encourage everyone to do that, because, I mean, we'd be there for 7 hours if everyone had a performance.
We'd like for everyone to perform some sort of, bring your talent.
But ultimately what I'm saying, and some people are like, you know what? I'm gonna hand you this note because this is everything that I want to say, and it's more than I have time to say in this time. And then some people are just like, hey, I just want a picture. Whatever you want it to be, just know that, like, we're not, like, the way that we approach this is we are 100% grateful. Like, it's just, we are in a attitude of gratitude, a stance of, something that rhymes with stand. Like, we're basically just humbled that you guys come to the show, that some of you want to spend a little time with us and get a picture, and we're just happy that you're there. You don't have to say or do anything. You're not fitting any particular expectation. So if that makes you feel less nervous about it, then go with that, because we're not thinking about it in that way. In fact, you know, I heard, there was one girl in one of the shows who actually backed out of the line,
right,
before she got to the end. And I think we're gonna end up sending her something. Send her all the stuff that she would have gotten in the meet and greet line. But
it's kind of nerve-wracking.
I understand that. Some people deal with anxiety.
It
more
is nerve-wracking,
man. I get it.
It's nerve-wracking to stand in a line to meet somebody.
Oh, I totally get that.
Because it's, I mean, you can see it, the line just kind of move along, and then all of a sudden you're like the next person. I remember a few years back when Dan TDM came to Long Beach, and like Lincoln was a fan of his, and I was like, I can get you in to see him, man. I got connections. And so we went in the meet and greet line, and we're in the line, and I realized that I was nervous. I was like, why am I nervous? Just by virtue of being in a line with a bunch of people who are like also nervous, it's like contagious.
Yeah.
And you build this expectation. It's like, there is this moment of, okay, we're gonna shake hands and I'm supposed to say something. I have to say something. If I don't say anything, that could be weird, you know?
Yeah, but even the people who don't say anything, but it's not weird for
everything
us.
Like that does make me anxious.
I'm not saying at all, don't be nervous. I'm just saying, just be yourself. If yourself is nervous, then be nervous. If yourself is excited, then just be excited. And there's no judgment at all from us. And I know, listen, we're bigger than you realize.
Physically.
I know that I am intimidating physically. People are sometimes afraid to look at me because I think I'm just like, I look like,
it's
you know,
odd.
I look like Detlef Schrempf or whatever that NBA basketball player was. You know what I'm saying? I'm a huge person. I have a lot of hair on my face. You know, I look like a hawk.
You're weird.
I've been called a falcon by a drunk man in a van one time.
You look like a falcon.
Man.
You're like a tall, Detlef Schrempf looking falcon.
But I'm very soft and inviting. You know, I have sweaty hands. You can shake them if you want.
That didn't make it any less weird. We should talk about hot chicken. So we get to Nashville, and we had a little more time in Nashville because we had like a one-day break, and man, by the time I got in line at, we decided to go to Hattie B's, even though Mythical Chef Josh told us to get hot chicken from Bolton's Spicy Chicken and Fish. Mm-hmm. And even though Wikipedia says that Prince's is the originator of hot chicken.
And we didn't go there.
We were kind of starving, delirious, and closest to Hattie B's.
And it also, we tend to be very dependent upon Yelp.
And that a lot so many of people, Yelp reviews.
A lot of people
love
don't like
it.
That. Don't like when you're that dependent on Yelp, but like I just, you know, like 4,000 reviews, 4.5 stars, like you know it's gonna be good.
And we get there, we scootered there.
Of course we did.
And then
nearly died.
We're there for a couple of minutes, and then we hear, well, it's 45 minutes from where you are in line.
Yeah, it was like being on Space Mountain.
I showed up starving. I was like, I don't wait this long for, I just don't, it doesn't add up. So I started looking for Bolton's. I mean, like, we can travel to Bolton's via scooter, eat and be done and still come back and not have gone through this line probably.
Right, but that, to me, that's all part of the experience of going to a place like that. And I will say, I do think it's worth noting that, you know, hot chicken has been exported from Nashville, and of course it's in LA, and there's a number of places that serve it, Hal and Ray's probably being the most popular, and I have seen the Hal and Ray's line before, but neither of us, and I don't know if we were just holding out for Nashville or just happened, mm-hmm. you know, circumstantially.
Had never been there.
We had never had hot chicken.
Well, you know, we did our Instagram stories from the line, and then we finally get up there and we order, and you know what? I'll agree with you. I actually ended up saying, I'll say it again, I'm glad that I waited 45 minutes. And I kind of learned my lesson. It really, I mean, you talk about getting nervous in a line. I mean, in this type of line, when the only thing you gotta do is pay and eat food, boy, that's a great scenario. I mean, it's a great payoff. And you're talking like Magic Mountain or Space Mountain?
You saying we should serve hot chicken in the meet and greet?
I'm saying in contrast, to that, you don't have to say anything besides order what you want at the end. And then it really-
You gotta pick your spice level.
But my
though.
Point is the wait made it taste that much better.
Oh yeah.
And we both-
Delayed gratification, man. It's the spice of life. It's the hot chicken of life.
And so I don't like spicy foods. I've been burned, pun intended, from the show. So now anything that's spicy to me is like, it's triggering physically, so I start to feel a little nauseous. Mm. But I didn't want to just try mild or medium. I'm like, if it's called hot chicken, I should order hot.
And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, because I had an idea of what I thought the hot chicken was, fried chicken with hot sauce on it.
Like basted on it, kind of like a hot wing.
But it is not that. It is chicken that has spice actually in the breading, first of all. So that's the first thing that happens is, so if you were to like peel back the skin, you would see like a little red layer of spice that is part of the, so it gets all the way onto the chicken. And then on top of that, depending on what spice level you get, they added dry rub. Now, I'm sure there's some places that do a sauce, but these places do a dry rub on top of, so it's basically like a powdery thing. It's not, I think there might be some sauce as well on Hattie B's. I couldn't really tell.
There's a dryness and a wetness to it, but there's definitely a redness to it that makes it a bit intimidating. And but I was so hungry.
But the levels were Southern, which means no spice. And yes, someone in our group who will remain nameless, but he's one of Britton's friends. That's what he got.
No one who worked for us.
He's also a Carolina fan, so it all adds up. The next level is mild, and then medium, and then hot, and then damn hot, and then shut the cluck up. Those are the levels. And we all went with hot. So Jenna got hot, we got hot, Britton got hot.
And let me tell you, it was hot. But let me tell you something else. It tasted great. Like
flavor,
the hotness,
man.
Tasted
so
great.
So much flavor.
And it was big and juicy. Oh, it was so good. I mean, it was.
And you got the dark.
I love a good food experience, man, you know. And I think it's turned me back on to hotness. When I'm riding back home, coming back, we landed in LA. It's an hour drive to get back to the studio to get in our cars. I found myself on Yelp looking at the hot chicken places around here.
And there's quite
a
few.
I'm like, man, I'm back on the spicy train.
We might have to have a hot chicken taste test Instagram story, like when we went around and tried to find the best taco. We might have to do that with hot chicken.
But I did not order like the upper echelons of hotness you did.
So you can get a tender or a wing by itself for $2 extra and add that to your order. So a lot of people do this just as a novelty kind of thing. So I had a show, you know? I feel like I've eaten the world's hottest pepper twice. So I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna do a damn hot tender. And then Britton, you know, he's 19. His body can take anything at this point. He got a shut the cluck up wing. No, a tender. He got a shut the cluck up tender. Mm-mm. And if you were following along on our Instagram stories, Red MC and Link Lamont, you would have seen all this happen.
And Britton's, I guess you could shout his out.
Britton Buchanan, follow him on Instagram too, because the action's happening over there when we're traveling.
It was funny because he ate that thing. He thought he was going to be all right, and then his face just started crying. His eyeballs just sweated.
Right. He cried quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
The damn hot tender was damn hot. But it was like, as I was eating it, I was like, I could have gotten the sandwich this way.
Well,
And I would have been okay.
He texted us and said that his dad looked into it, because he tried to talk his dad into eating one. He said that it had...
The top, shut the cluck up.
Yeah, it had scorpion pepper and ghost pepper
and habanero, equal parts of all three.
Oh gosh.
And it's like a powder, which is, incidentally, it's like the heat is super intense, but it dissipates more quickly because it doesn't have an oil base to it the way that, it doesn't have an oil carrier the way that sauce does. Because sauce will get into your skin, because literally, like, you know, like when you get like essential oils and you put them into like a olive oil carrier, so they'll like be carried further and they go into your skin. That's why eating the pepper straight, because you've got that oil, and then even worse, when you eat a sauce, it sticks with you. You feel it later, you feel it in your stomach, you feel it on the way out, and it's still incredibly hot in each stage. Something about the dry rub makes this, it's like a flash bang of hotness. But for me, an hour later, I'd forgotten that I ate something so
hot.
Well,
even when you're eating it, I highly recommend eating it with the slaw, which was great, and the pickle.
Creamy.
The pickle and the bread that comes
with
it.
You got every creamy side.
Oh, yeah.
You got the mac and cheese,
potato salad,
and the slaw.
I did.
And I ended up getting collard greens and beans, of course. The beans are good.
That doesn't help with the heat,
but
though.
They actually, the collard greens had this like enhancing effect because of the vinegar. It enhanced the heat.
That's tough.
So anyway, Hattie B's was excellent, but of course, because we didn't want to come back and face Josh, and also Josh made an incredible dinner recommendation for a place called Husk that we went.
Oh, that was amazing.
One of the best meals
we've
ever had.
Shout out to all you people working at Husk. The people in the kitchen knew who we were and started sending out stuff that we didn't order. And they stuffed us like pigs.
Oh gosh.
They stuffed us with pigs.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was amazing.
First of all, the waitress described the items and I feel like she spoke for like 12 minutes unbroken describing the different items. And she would say things like, well, first we take this and we put it in under ashes for 12 hours and then we take it and we rub it across a pig's back until it squeals. And then we capture the squeal and we put it in a bottle and we sprinkle it on top of the collards. And then we take the collards and we run them into the past. And then we bring them out of the past once they have the essence of the old days. And then we bring them to the table and then we grind them up and sprinkle them on the other foods that you will be enjoying. I mean, I had a freaking whiskey with ham in it.
Yeah, that was crazy, man.
It was so good.
What a night.
And it's in an old house. It's in an old house that apparently is haunted. So, Husk. Go to Husk.
It was a surgeon from like the Civil War.
Civil War, yeah. But so Josh told us to go to there, so we felt like we had to follow his recommendation.
But we also felt like we couldn't come back until we went to Bolton's Hot Chicken and Fish. Right. Spicy Chicken and Fish, that's what it's called. And they got a cockatrice breathing fire. Well, they got a chicken breathing fire out front.
Again, Instagram. We showed you this.
They've got a sign when you order there, and it says, basically, proceed at your own risk. Do not touch your eyes or babies when eating our hot chicken and fish.
And
do not touch babies.
And someone had said,
think about that. How bad would you feel if like you sauce a baby? Oh man, I'm sorry. I just sauced your baby.
Well, it's really dry rubbing a baby.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to dry rub your baby. I mean, if you've got a nasty habit of dry rubbing a baby in the eyes, do not go to Nashville.
Yeah, right.
You're not even invited.
Mm-mm.
Like you cannot, first of all, that's a habit you need to break. What are you doing touching baby's eyes?
Yeah.
Like if a baby's got an eye booger, who cares? Just let them have it. It's actually probably a good thing. It's like a protective layer at the corner of the eyes.
Yeah.
You don't need to.
I think in general, you shouldn't touch the face of a baby.
Don't touch babies' faces.
You know?
Eyes, like, oh, look at that baby, so cute. Can I rub its eyes? What?
Mm-hmm.
And to have to put up a sign, I mean, what does that say about the people in Nashville?
It means
a lot of baby eye touchers.
They've been dry rubbing babies.
Eye touchers.
They're dry rubbing babies left and right before they put that sign up.
Probably good for the baby.
The spice levels at Bolton, it's a different scale.
We were told this.
There's no spice, and then there's light or something like that. Then there's mild. Then there's medium. Then there's hot.
But they said whatever you got at Hattie B's is what we were told by two different people. Go one level lower. Down. I'm grateful that we did.
And they were right. So
it's a different experience.
Hot there was medium at Bolton's, and they don't have a sandwich there. It's just the fried chicken. Similar sides. I tried the beans. I'll just go ahead and say that not just Josh, but most Nashvillians that we ran into and said we had been to Hattie B's, they had this disappointed look on their face. They were like, of course you guys did the touristy thing. You should really go to Bolton's or you should go to Prince's.
Mm-hmm.
Guys.
And we did. Well, we went to one and Bolton's was really good.
Really good. Really good, and the atmosphere was like so authentic.
It's like cinder block buildings that looked like bunkers almost. It looked like I was eating in a barbecue bunker.
Right.
Really, really rustic.
But we gotta say,
we both enjoyed Hattie B's more. I mean, it was just, it was more of a distinct thing.
Now they do have hot fish. You can get all the same spices on the fish at Bolton's, and so we got a hot fish. So we went all the way to hot, and they got whitefish, they got catfish, they got grouper. We got the whitefish because it was at the top of the menu. We figured that was the one that was suggested.
I would recommend doing both though.
Yeah, you should try that. I did because I've never had a spicy fish like that. But it was very good.
We should skip to the rhyming because we're at this point in our conversation, we haven't gotten to it, but yeah, being a fan of old country music and, you know, we went through the Country Music Hall of Fame and took our time, had a great time. They had an Outlaws exhibit, which was amazing. But in a lot of the pictures that you'll see throughout the Country Music Hall of Fame, you'll see people performing at the Ryman Auditorium because it was the home of the Grand Ole Opry for 30 years.
Yeah. And
was the distinct, it was the place where country music legends were made and certified.
Yeah, so basically anybody who's anybody in country music, like old country,
yeah,
has played. And then of course,
Hank Williams.
All the new acts have played there as well.
Elvis Presley still got this playing there.
Incredible history.
And but the Ryman Auditorium was originally built as an actual church, like a revival venue. And
you can totally tell when you go in there because it's all pews. It's all a big circle. It's a huge balcony that follows the same semicircular pattern. And then you've got the stained glass windows. I mean, super famous. It's super famous for the history, but it's also super famous for the acoustics because it's all wood.
Yeah.
And it's just, and the circular thing, it's just like it's one of the best sounding places
and I'm
that
doing,
you can play music.
I'm doing some research when we're in DC. I'm like, I want to see Merle playing here. And I mean, he first played there as he was starting his career in 1967, but then Johnny Cash, who was a member of the Grand Ole Opry and was then kicked out, and you can see that in the movie Walk the Line, he was let go. But then he came back when he had his own television show, the Johnny Cash Show. He insisted that it be filmed at the Ryman Auditorium, at mm-hmm. the home of the Grand Ole Opry. So they would film his show there. And I mean, Johnny Cash is bringing Bob Dylan on his show. I mean, this is an amazing institution within an institution, just his show. And he had, as Merle was gaining popularity, he comes on the show and seeing the two of them interact is like, it just gives me goosebumps thinking about that footage. But one story in particular is amazing, is that of course Merle was in prison, and just like the lyric in Mama Tried, he did turn 21 in prison. He wasn't serving life without parole, but
15 years or something like that.
And Johnny Cash knew this, but he encouraged Merle to talk about it openly, his time in prison, which he hadn't done. Now, some people knew that he had been in prison, but it was on the Johnny Cash Show, on the stage that we performed on, that Merle, in a conversation with Johnny Cash, told the world for the first time that he was a prisoner. He was an ex-con. Mm-hmm. And not only that, he told it in the context of the story of when Johnny Cash on many occasions would go and perform concerts at prisons. Folsom Prison concert is a famous album, but so is his San Quentin performance. But he performed at San Quentin a number of times, and one of those times, Merle Haggard was in the audience mm-hmm. as a freaking inmate. And he's like telling that story. So it's basically his coming out that, hey, I was an ex-con, and blowing people's minds that, Johnny, I was at your concert as an inmate. And so, and to know that happened on that stage just kind of blew my mind. And then I realized, man, I'm getting nervous.
Well, I was already nervous before we went to the Hall of Fame. You know, because first of all, everyone who we talk to, if we say we're playing the Ryman, like, well, you're playing the Ryman, like
yeah.
you're going to this sacred place. And I'm also thinking about the thing that it is that we do, which is we're not country musicians. I mean, we're gonna be acting like fools up in this place.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're playing music, but it's stupid in a lot of ways.
We got a lot of testicle jokes.
Yeah, and so.
And we've got a whole rap set, which feels weird.
Which feels a little out of place in the Ryman. But, so in seeing all that footage, you know, and people who made their debut there, because one of the cool things about the Country Music Hall of Fame, in addition to like the memorabilia the archival sort of stuff, or the artifacts, is all the video that they have in there. You
right.
know, they've got so, they've all these, this, like you said, the footage of the conversation on the Johnny Cash Show with Merle, but so much of that and so many pictures are like, that's the Ryman, that's the Ryman, that's the Ryman. And then I kept saying like, we're playing there tonight. And I started thinking a couple of things. I was like, A, I'm way more nervous than I usually am before a show. And two, we had decided to play two Merle songs, two of our favorite Merle songs.
Which is something we never done. We don't cover anybody's songs, and we've never performed Merle's songs publicly that I can remember.
Right, and so, you know, we did one that is a really popular old school Merle song, and then one that's a little bit of a deeper cut. And I was thinking, I might cry.
Oh.
I was like, I don't want to cry during this thing, because yeah. I can't cry and still continue to sing. I'm not one of those people who can, like, you know.
Cry sing.
Some people can.
Kind of like Vince Gill. He seems like he's always cry singing.
My voice would break. And so I was like, I don't want that to happen. So, you know, I don't know how I'm going to take my mind off that. But a few things about the show. I mean, first of all, thankfully, we did have everything down from a musical standpoint by the right. time we got there. It did sound like we could hear ourselves really well, and you sort of feel the power of the music kind of going out and coming around that circle and coming back to you. And also, you can hear every single thing that is being the crowd reaction is so immediate because they're right there on you, and it's 2,200 people. It's a small venue, and they're kind of on top of you in a lot of ways because you've got that huge balcony.
Yeah,
so the furthest person from you is still relatively close.
And it makes such a big difference. I mean, in the little bit of touring that we've done, it's like every venue is different, and you never know exactly what you're gonna get and what crowd is gonna show up. But everything lined up. I mean, the crowd was so boisterous and responsive.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I had somebody, I don't know how we got to this, like me asking for antibacterial soap, and then somebody's like throwing
hand sanitizer
up at me, and like I emptied the entire bottle that she threw to me into my hand, and then I didn't know what to do with it, and like we came up with something. It was a lot of fun, man. Everybody was having a good time. So by the time in the middle of the set when we performed Silver Wings, you felt like you weren't gonna cry? Because people said that they cried.
It was,
and I was like, yes.
It was very, very emotional for me. Like playing both right. that and then Driftwood, and we played Driftwood with Britton. He got out there and killed the solo, the guitar solo. And it was emotional for yeah. sure, but I didn't think that I was gonna like break down at that moment. So the show just went on, it was great. And we got to that last song that we sing, which is a little bit of an emotional, it's funny, but it's got an emotional quality and tone to it.
Yeah.
The song that we closed the show out with. And you knew this, most people probably didn't pick up on the fact that I like flubbed two lyrics. I mean, we ended up like just changing in the moment one lyric that was from a different part of the song, and then there was one part where I didn't come in, but you sang that part, whatever. Which by this point in the tour wasn't typical, especially
right.
that song. And I told you later, I was like, I was so in the moment and thinking that like, I cannot believe how much fun this is. I cannot believe how good this is. You know what I'm saying? Not good, like, I can't believe how good we are, just how good this is all lining up.
Yeah, you were savoring it, man. I think that's great.
And I lost the ability to be in the song because I was so in the moment. It's like I kind of left my body for a second and took a little flight around the Ryman and communed with the spirits of old country and then came back in to my body and was like, oh, I should be singing.
Yeah, it was magical, man. I mean, was it the peak of our career? Yeah, I mean,
it hasn't gotten any better than that for me personally.
Well, it was 2 days ago.
No, I'm saying, in people are like, what's the best moment in your career?
Oh, wow.
I cannot think of any time where I felt as fulfilled in what we get to do as in that moment.
But because the other things that, I mean, you put out the internet video and it's just like, you can only be so fulfilled by like the response to the comments. I mean, and you can, if you craft a documentary or a series or anything and you like screen it and then people, you're like watching people from the back of the room and then they're clapping. It's like, that is very thrilling. But it's not the same as performing. I mean, as having that moment of all the faces are staring back at you and you're like, I'm savoring this like the first bite of hot chicken I ever had.
Yeah.
You know, you never have, I mean, you can read about hot chicken. You can make analogies about hot chicken at the end of podcasts.
Right.
But until you eat the hot chicken on the stage of the Ryman,
mm-hmm.
Oh shoot, that would have been peak. Mm-hmm. That's, we blew it.
That would have been too much. That would have been sensory overload.
That's gonna be our next tour. I mean, that's what people want anyway, right?
The hot chicken tour?
Yeah, we're just gonna get on stage and eat hot chicken.
Well, and that's another thing. I'm glad you brought that up. Not the hot chicken, but the eating thing. Because you know me, and we've talked about this before. It's like, another reason that it's so fulfilling to me is like, okay, it's cool when we like, it's like, oh, we got to, oh, there's 15 million people subscribed to Good Mythical Morning. And that's awesome. And it's, and you know what? It's why people show up at our freaking show. Let's be honest. It's why people can show up and watch us sing. They're not showing up to watch us sing primarily, most people, because they've seen us sing. They've seen us do weird stuff on the internet and they want to come hang out with us. But because I truly believe that we, you know, we've crafted something. Like, we have crafted a show that I feel good about artistically and creatively. And again, that's the thing that kind of gets me going, right? It's obviously, I love the stuff that's not planned and the humor that happens in the moment and the things that make that particular show unique. But the thing that really gets me going is like sitting down and over the course of a like labored process, creating something special that then is crafted with the real-time reception of an audience in mind. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and
it's very rewarding.
And
when
then being
it comes
able
together.
To go out there and actually execute it and see the real-time, feel the real-time reaction from an audience in a place that's so special, the combination of those things and the way that it came together, I was just like, it doesn't get any better than this. I mean, like, we could... Hopefully we'll continue to do great things. Hopefully we've got bigger and better things ahead of us. And there's other creative things that we want to do. But regardless of how well those things go and how well they're received, it can only match. In my mind, it can only match the way I felt at the Ryman. That's
I agree with that. Yeah, I feel that way too. I'm just, and it, again, going out there and doing a show, it puts everything else we've done in perspective, because we wouldn't be able to do it if it weren't for the other things. But I'm grateful for the experience because of everything you said, and also because it gives us perspective that we can't have when we just sit behind our desk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like we say at the shows, you know, it's like, There's all kinds of amazing things that have, all the interactions that we have with people online are invaluable and amazing and in volume much greater. You know, there's just way more of them because it's the nature of the internet. But there is just something different about being in a room full of mythical beasts. It's like, we just don't get to experience that. Like, we make this podcast, we do the show, we do those other things, and people experience it on this regular basis and have these special connections, and then we hear about them retrospectively. And that's really special. But to be in the same room while it's all happening and the immediate feedback, and I feel like first of all, our audience is very eclectic in a lot of ways in terms of like just where people are from, their background, their ages, but there's also something very uniform about the way of people who are just mythical, you know what I'm saying? And so there's a lot of like-minded people in the same room who are just like connecting, in a, not just with us, but with each other. Being in that atmosphere is just special.
Yeah, so again, I wanna thank you for, if you've come out to one of our shows, thank you, and I invite you, if you haven't, to check out Rhett and Link Live. All of this isn't a promotion for our show. I mean, it's an inadvertent promotion, and that's why I'm just gonna, I'll plug it again, rhettandlinklive.com. I'm also, I got Jenna to record our sound check for the Merle cover with Britain. I have that, so I'm gonna post that on the society. I'm gonna get that posted on the society. So that's the sound check, not from the Ryman, but from DC, because we didn't have a lot of time to check at the Ryman, so we had to practice.
It sounds good, because we were still learning it.
It doesn't matter, I'll post it there on the society for.
Okay, so if it doesn't sound good, it's just a little treat. Yeah. Okay, I got anything else that we wanna say before I
give
a
rec? Give me a rec, man, give us a rec. Okay, it's your turn.
I'm gonna give a rec. This is one of those things that many, many months behind when everyone was talking about this thing, but if you're like me, you didn't see it originally. And I watched this movie on the plane, and so I'm gonna do a rec of Bo Burnham's Eighth Grade. For those of you who have not taken the time to see this movie, I just highly recommend it. It's just, there's something about it that's just so visceral, like the way that he puts you into the experience of middle school in a way that makes you feel uncomfortable. And I don't ever feel that way when I watch stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's like people talk about, I can't watch that because it makes me feel uncomfortable. And I wasn't about to stop watching it, but he's so effective. And the lead actor in this, I don't know what her name is. Look that up, because I want to get that right. The lead actor, the lead actress in Eighth Grade, the way that, she, I mean, she's incredible. She just nails it so hard. Hmm. And so it's just really cool to see somebody that we knew from way back. You know, we hung out with Bo Burnham at YouTube Live back in 2008, seven?
Probably eight.
And he was just a YouTuber, man. And he goes off and writes and directs this incredible film. So I know many of you have probably seen it, but a lot of you, probably more of you are like me and you just didn't watch it the first time it came out. I just highly recommend it.
What's her name?
Elsie Fisher.
All right, thanks
she's
for
gonna,
that, Rhett.
She's gonna go on and do even bigger things.
All right, guys, thanks for hanging out with us, and we'll speak at you again next week. We'll give you another biscuit for your ears.
Yeah, maybe next week will be the peak of our careers.